Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Good to get together, Jim, and with our audience out there in the airwave land. And it's another lovely day in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think it's been, apart from the occasional forest fire smoke and some... We didn't have super, super hot days.
No, it has been very nice. And also for this week, the stock market's been quite all right as well.
Yeah, what does it mean when you've had a relatively firm stock market going into Labor Day?
Oh, there's kind of a seasonal in here. Mm. You know, the fund managers get back from holiday, and what do they do at their desk? They buy stocks. So often seasonal positive into Labor Day. And of course, we have to get out that no white shoes after Labor Day. It's very no-no. So, and of course, any time of year, you just don't wear a white belt either. So.
I don't know if those fashion things, you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day. I said, well, what if that's the color of your favorite team?
No, it's white shoes.
Oh, white shoes.
Yeah, white shoes. Decades ago, if somebody didn't have the right clothes, the scorn, it was called the full Cleveland. If you had a gabardine suit on or something like that, you know.
Yeah. So, well, I always thought it was a white shirt. You're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day.
No, just white shoes.
Oh. Well.
But who would, and even then, wearing white shoes in the summertime, good God.
Well, I would never have any because I'm the kind of person, if I just look at a white shirt, it gets a stain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wear a lot of white.
Well, you want to talk about shirts, I want to talk about shoes. Let's go and talk about the market.
Let's talk about markets. China's economic slump continues to batter the old economy, steel and coal.
Yeah, that's the thing. Last year's summer, there were going to be shortages of everything, nickel, aluminum, grains, coal, everything, crude oil shortages forever, and then, boom, all over. But that was just a rage that went through the market. Of course, we noticed all the technical excesses and advised as such. And now we have weaker industrial commodity prices. As a matter of fact, the grains are even weak. They had a couple of months ago, they had a sharp rally on crop scare somewhere, maybe Ukraine, and then gave it up. And so basic commodities are weak, and they are telling us that the economy is slowing. And also, eventually, it will get through to all of the CPI inflation that people are all chumped about lately with, you know, your basic cost of living. It has been uncomfortable. It spiked up. And then I guess the latest number was plus 3%. So you're not going to get much deflation in the cost of living, but it can go back down to kind of being close to unchanged. But what's really going to happen is these commodities are, I think they're going to fail. And then that's for a couple of reasons, Jim. One, the economy really is slowing. And that's following the signal given by the yield curve inverting earlier in the year. And it's inevitable, as we've been saying. Once you get the inversion, there will be a recession. So the thing is to start looking for it. And weaker commodities will help on that. Now, the other one that's going to be working against commodities is that in a post-bubble contraction, one of the features has been the senior currency becoming chronically firm. And the U.S. dollar is firm. It's much firmer than many people would like it. They keep condemning it. Oh, you got to have, the renminbi, Chinese currency is going to become the alternative. And then you got these BRIC guys out there talking about putting together an alternative currency. And even the first talk about that, Jim, was that it would be convertible into a combination of gold and commodities, and that showed right away they hadn't done much thinking on it. You price commodities according to money, and gold is money, so you wouldn't. And now I think the latest buzz about BRIC is they want to get more people in, and there's no talk about convertibility into gold or commodities or anything. So it's just a buzz that's going through. And and then, of course, the example, and we mention it frequently, is Argentina earlier in the year complaining about the U.S. dollar and seeking an alternative. And, of course, the problem is that Argentina owes a lot of U.S. dollars due and payable in New York. And this is one of the hell holes of a post-bubble contraction, is that those that borrowed the money in the financial center have to pay it back with senior currency units. So that means they got to sell something, you know, like commodities, mine production, copper, lead, zinc, whatever. They got to sell something to get their hands on a dollar in order to meet an obligation in New York. It's ancient, this thing. So the problem of servicing debt from a weak currency to the senior currency has been a problem for ages.
Well, the BRICS, which included Saudi Arabia now and the United Arab Emirates, Iran likely to join next year. Their goal, of course, is to replace the U.S. dollar, but as we speak, the yuan or renminbi, depending which way you want to judge it, is crashing, and the ruble is rubble. So you're too big, you know, and the Indian currency isn't very strong. How do they expect? I guess that's why they included the Saudis, because they're floating in cash.
Oh, yeah, they got money. Yeah.
How long do you think it would take them to replace U.S. dollar? Because right now you can go into the deepest, darkest jungles of anywhere with a U.S. dollar and they'll recognize it. If I give them a bill with the face of Chairman Mao on it, maybe not so much.
No. The senior currency will remain the U.S. For the foreseeable future, because we're going into a contraction, and all the debt out there that's due and payable in U.S. dollars is essentially a short position in U.S. dollars. So it is going to be unrelentingly firm. Well, I prefer to use the term chronically firm, and it'll plague central bankers around the world. It'll defeat the ability of the Federal Reserve to depreciate its own currency. So it's going to be a wonderful world.
Yeah, and talking about how long currencies hang around, you being a market historian, the Roman Empire lasted 1,000 years, but 400 years after that, Roman money was still circulating around the world, and people recognized it and used it.
Oh, yeah, there was the gold coinage was recognized. But in the 3rd century in Rome, it was like our past 100 years where bureaucrats went crazy, wars all over the place, declared wars on their own citizens, taxed the hell out of them, and then when that wasn't enough, depreciated the coinage like mad. So then eventually out of it came the people just dealt in gold or good silver coins. And then the next crazy inflation period broke out in about 1500, and it was the same thing. Everybody declaring war on the other countries and upon their own citizens, and funding it through currency depreciation. And it went on for a little over 100 years. I've called these things tyrannical centuries, and the one in the 1500s was so evil that the bureaucrats, the controlling freak bureaucrats, corrupted the church into a venal, murderous police state. Astounding. And then, of course, following that, beginning in the early 1600s, you had what is called historically the Reformation, and they think of it as the religious Reformation, but when you read the history, everything was reformed. Bureaucratic excesses, excessive taxation, and then society just went back about its business and stopped depreciating the currency. So we're in very interesting times.
Headline, Chinese investors rush to offshore funds to offset domestic risk. That's from Reuters.
Yeah, well, I think this is probably, they might be buying U.S. Stocks and bonds. The junk bond has been doing very well. It's kind of a hit to bond prices earlier today, but we'll see what it brings. But nonetheless, that kind of a headline made me think that they're probably buying U.S. stocks and bonds.
Headline from the New York Times, paid late or never, painters, builders, and brokers hit by China's property crisis.
Yeah, that gets it right down to the individual companies and individual workers within those companies who actually, you know, did the cabinet work and painted the ceilings and stuff like that. So it gets everybody, doesn't it?
Well, that's what's going to cause economic unrest. And I know the Chinese Revolution, all these revolutions, Russian Revolution, American Revolution, they all happen when the regular guy says, I got nothing to lose. I'm not getting paid. My family needs to be fed. We need to make a change. A headline that caught your eye, Country Garden, China's largest real estate concern, asked for more time to repay renminbi bonds.
Oh, yeah. We ran into Country Garden a few weeks ago because prior to that it was Evergrande. Remember Evergrande?
Well, they're in bankruptcy protection. Their second
Maybe
largest company.
Maybe they're now so bad they've disappeared.
Yeah.
And now they've got, and this was from Financial Times, so now they've got Country Garden to focus on. So,
now, maybe China learned from the recession in 2008, where here banks were bailed out, and the post-analysis of that was, no, if they're that bad, let them fail. People's deposits.
I'll tell you something. Bureaucrats never learn anything.
Yeah, well.
And they get hit, whacked, and then all they do is lay the blame somewhere else. Now, one that is interesting here is this one about Hong Kong dollars set for the worst month since 1985.
You know, what's the deal there, Bob?
I don't know. All of a sudden, the Hong Kong dollar heads south, just like that.
Yeah.
There's fast things happening out there.
My good friend Cam McMurtry, a former student of mine at BCIT and then co-worker at News 1130, he's now one of the richest men in Hong Kong. He said, if you can't succeed in business here, You can't succeed in business anywhere because they don't have income tax. So you're basically working in a tax-free environment. Mm-hmm. But since the Chinese government took over Hong Kong, that free enterprise spirit is slowly but surely being quashed to death.
Yep. Bureaucrats will do it every time.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, too, China being relatively new to free, well, what we call free enterprise, but really capitalism, mm-hmm. they still don't have an internal understanding that a healthy economy is good for everybody. And sometimes the government has to help out to make sure the little guy isn't crushed by an economy that falls.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because we do that here.
Well, I've got a long-held theory is that when the severe contraction comes in, all the prosperity in China has been generated in the southern provinces close to Hong Kong and Taiwan. And they're not going to put up with too much authoritarian stuff out of Beijing. So the it's funny to think about it, but I think that in the major, major contraction that the folks in the free part of China will get fed up with the communists in Beijing, and it's eventually going to be a takeover by Hong Kong. Hong Kong is going to take over the government in China. How about that one?
Well, once people taste democracy, they hate having to go back to dictator ways.
Yeah.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy and more headlines right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Bob Hoy. Headline from the Financial Times. Eurozone money supply shrinks first time in 13 years as lending slows.
Yep. Another sign of the financial markets beginning to contract. And then the one that I really like here is the bottom one, where millions of Brits told not to heat homes at night on this net zero CO2 mania. And England, with the North Sea and all that, has got huge amounts of natural gas. I think they still got lots of coal, that sort of stuff. But the pitch has been that CO2 is evil, and we're not going to have a system that can provide you with enough heat that on the cold night you're going to turn on a little heat. No, they want you to freeze in the dark. Hey, we've heard that before somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. A friend of the show, Ted Dixon, pointed out yesterday during my interview, he said our new technologies are coming on all the time. He said carbon capture, modern coal plants that have built-in scrubbers that take all the nasty stuff out and take that CO2 that's generated and, again, capture it and use it for industrial purposes. Carbon becomes carbon black, which is used in steel production, mm-hmm. I believe, you know, because you need carbon for steel. But he said all they're caring about is fossil fuel evil.
Yeah.
And when you find new ways to make it friendlier and so on, they don't want to hear about it. They just don't want to hear it.
The point being is that carbon dioxide is a trace gas in the atmosphere, and you've got charts showing temperature and the amounts of CO2 in the atmosphere going back millions of years. And there's no correlation at all. But if you get really close into the charts, you'll find that when the temperature decides to go up, warming the climate, then CO2 increases. CO2 doesn't cause heat. Heat increases CO2. It's there. It's in the charts.
Oh, yeah. I was Eric Sorensen, national correspondent for Global Television, was talking about how a volcanic eruption in the Pacific had created all this steam, which helps trap heat. But then he ends the story saying, but don't worry, volcanic eruptions have little or no impact on the climate. The worst extinction in the world's history was caused by Yellowstone, a supervolcano erupting, causing a nuclear winter that killed 98% of the planet's life. What do you mean volcanoes don't affect the climate?
Well, most of the Plinian or cone-type volcanoes, when they blow up, they send a column of ash and sulfur straight up. It gets into the stratosphere, and if it's a cubic mile of stuff blowing up there, it'll cool things off for a bit. Now, in 1815 or 1816, it was Tambora.
Yeah.
And it blew up, here's my book. The Eruption That Changed the World, Tambora. 1815, Indonesia's Mount Tambora. Now, that was huge. And in the eastern states, farmers planted crops three times, and each time they got frosted out in New York State in the summer. And there was a fair amount of famine and starvation following that one. So all you need is really one big volcano like that going off, and it cools things off. Now, the other one was the one last year, Honga Bonga, whatever it was, where it blew up the biggest column of water ever detected. And that went up, and all of that humidity and water in there put on the warm. I mean, within 2 weeks, the measurements of atmospheric temperatures started to go up. So this is where some of the heat waves this summer have been due to that, pardon me, Honga Bonga volcano that blew up water rather than ash and sulfur. So there's things out there that are so beyond the influence of CO2 in the atmosphere, and only fools would go, well, no, opportunists, because there's big money in touting that humans are evil, CO2's evil, and we got to control you.
When Krakatoa blew up in 1883, it put 20 million tons of sulfur into the atmosphere, and over 5 years dropped the world's average temperature 1.2 degrees Celsius, 2.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Volcanoes really do affect climate.
They do indeed.
Yeah, so somebody's reading from the purple Kool-Aid kit.
Purple Kool-Aid kit, yeah.
Yahoo headline, hedge fund exposures to seven biggest tech stocks at record high. Is this a dangerous thing, Bob, to put everything just in this one ETF?
They're big cap stocks, so that means the big funds can buy them. And then also, the attitude is that this is a sure thing. These stocks are so good, they don't have to sell. So you go back to the late 1960s, there was a group of stocks that was called the Nifty 50. Yeah. And that was the same thing. It was a one-way decision. You just bought and owned them, and you would be fine forever. Now, I looked it up once the other day, and one of the companies that was you just had to own forever was called Polaroid.
Yes, and I was going to say Kodak.
What do you hear about Polaroid these days?
Now, they're still around. I think they make copiers. And Polaroid cameras are actually coming back. People like having an instant printout picture, the physical thing, not just because a camera, you'll lose your camera with your digital pictures if you haven't offloaded them. They're gone forever. The physical thing.
We've got to get back into Polaroid stock again, Jim.
Yeah. Well, what about Kodak? Is Kodak made the mistake of inventing digital photography? There goes the demand for film stock.
Yeah, Jim.
Headline from the Wall Street Journal. Joe Biden pushes electric vehicles, which will kill union jobs.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, because they're made elsewhere. They're outside of the loop of the regular manufacture of cars. Also, there was a headline I saw maybe last night or today or something that the electric vehicle sales are plunging, and it was also to do with inventories in China. And they've got electric cars parked all over the place. So the world is beginning to realize that maybe electric vehicles are not that good a deal after all. And then if we go into recession, governments won't have the money to subsidize them. So that
the biggest problem, Bob, is charging stations. There was just a recent survey that said 80% of the charging stations at any one time don't work.
Yeah,
people stranded
on radio, I think.
Yeah, and people who have gone on cross-nation trips in their new Lightning Ford pickup truck are finding they can't find any charging stations. Manitoba family ended up just abandoning the truck and renting a regular pickup truck for the rest of their trip.
Yeah.
So in an urban environment, I guess, where you can charge at home, perhaps. But again, my condo doesn't have any charging facilities, and they're worried about the fire risk of lithium batteries.
Yeah.
Because once they start on fire, it can take up to 3 days to put them out.
Yeah.
Your sprinkler system in the parkade may be, that's parking garage, by the way, for people outside of Canada. Apparently, parkade is a Canadian word.
Mm-hmm.
But it means parking garage.
Yep.
And finally, a headline that you like, Bob, was from Breitbart. Washington Post columnist changes mind and says President Joe Biden does warrant being investigated.
Yeah.
What's behind that?
Well, the White House is just so impossible. And Biden himself is increasingly incompetent. And not only that, he's just a puppet for the extreme left anyways. But the Democrat side are beginning to see, hey, maybe we've got to back off from the extreme control stuff.
Oh, and going back to Krakatoa, it generated what they believe was the loudest sound ever. The noise of the explosion that basically destroyed the island that the volcano was on was heard thousands of miles away. Thousands of miles.
Yeah.
Thousands of kilometers. However you put it, once you put thousands on, it's the same.
That would be a Big Bang example, isn't it?
So, after Labor Day, Bob, what do you think is going to happen to the stock markets? I know I asked that.
The stock market's going to roll over. The advanced decline lines are beginning to weaken. The leadership has been the Magnificent Seven. So there's been excesses. Technical excesses is about the right time. And we know that fall is often the season of discovery of financial problems. So I think we're going into a liquidity crisis that would hit both stocks and bonds. And earlier today I looked and junk bonds and treasuries were getting, we had a kind of a weak opening. So,
well, thank you very much for being on the show, Bob.
Jim, and I look forward to next week. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to market historian Bob Hoy, chief investment strategist at chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob, he loves to answer them. You can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.